teen spyt te van ons leiding en in die midde van ons pyn staan daar een wat bekend is met leiding en hy is gewillig om vir ons te genees, Jesus Christus.
Yeah. Feel the pain of a 70-soul singer who just saw the death of one of its soul leaders. I wanna sell records, but yet I feel eager to write political tunes that give a certain finger. To talk to God, they told me to climb a mountain. I'm thirsty for his revelation. Where's the colored fountain? His grace reigns.
Hey, everyone. Welcome back to the Christian Manifesto podcast. Happy New Year. Actually, we've changed the name in 2013. It's now the TCM Wire. We just kind of arbitrarily changed the name, wanted to do something more cool, something more hip, because that's what all the cool kids are doing these days, changing their name to something else. So, here we are. Welcome to the TCM Wire Episode 1. We are going back to a new numbering system, just like DC Comics did a couple years ago, I guess. But either way, in this first episode, we discussed New Year's resolutions. This conversation took place at the end of 2012, talking about what resolutions we'd made that year and what we were looking forward to in 2013. Really cool discussion. And then Nick and James, as always, wanted to sit down and talk about an album for their Dual Impression segment. And they sat down and talked about Sho Baraka's new album, which releases today, called The Talented Tenth. And then finally, to close out the podcast, I actually got the chance to sit down and talk with the artist Sho Baraka about his new album, why he chose to talk about certain topics, why he chose to use certain words that are pretty incendiary, especially within the Christian community. So, really good podcast episode. Hoping you guys enjoy what we've got. We've got a lot of new stuff coming down the pipeline in 2013. Hope you guys get excited with us. But thanks so much for tuning in. Sorry it's been so long since our last episode. Hopefully that won't be a problem in the future. Talk to you guys later.
To all my people who grind. What up, though? To all my people who dying, what up, ghost? Yeah, what up, ghost?
Clouds will come, the rain will fall.
Well, happy New Year, everybody. Welcome back to the podcast. I am your host, Calvin Moore, and I have our co-host with me, David Sidebotham. What's up, David?
I'm hosting, so that's definitely a great way to start out the new year. I know we've had a bit of a hiatus here, but we're back.
Yeah, we did have some time off. Thanks so much for coming back to the show, everybody. Trying to do some new things in the new year. As we're recording, this is actually still 2012, but since this is our first podcast for the year, I'm saying Happy New Year. So I guess technically Happy Early New Year, but by the time you're hearing this, Happy New Year is appropriate. So. Either way,
in different time zones.
It is kind of like being in a different time zone. Only this time, I'm in the past speaking to people in the future. It's kind of strange. It's weird. I don't know. Anyway, hopefully the future is awesome and we've got world peace and all that stuff. And everybody had fun watching the ball drop. If you did that, but
I like
either way,
right? At which point we're broadcasting to apes.
Well, yeah, and I think we're technically recording this before the Mayan calendar ends. So who knows? We may be recording this for nothing. So if you're hearing this, we survived. We survived the Mayan meltdown, and all we got was this lousy podcast.
That's good news for 2012, though. We get the podcast, and we get to not die.
Yes, that is always a plus, to not die. Although the Apostle Paul would disagree with us. By saying to live is Christ and to die is gain. And yes, you just got Jesus juked, just so you know.
Well, that and the Greeks. So I guess I got Jesus plus the Greeks. That's like tag teams there.
Either way, in today's roundtable segment, we're going to be talking about New Year's resolutions because this is kind of that time of year, or again, since we're doing this in 2012 and you're listening in 2013, it will be that time of year when people make New Year's resolutions to change things, to stop doing certain things, to start doing other things. And so today we wanted to kind of bat that question around of, you know, what are your New Year's resolutions, those kinds of things. So we're going to welcome back a few of our usual suspects to the line. Wayne Beeson, who is a campus minister at DePaul University through InterVarsity Fellowship. Welcome back to the line, Wayne.
Thanks. Good to be back.
Yeah, always glad to have you here. And next up, one of my best friends, Justin Imers, full-time grad student at Liberty Theological, is it Theological Seminary?
Yes, sir.
Okay, what are you getting, is it an MDiv you're working on there?
Well, I'm working on a Master of Arts in Theological Studies first, and then I'll be getting an MDiv.
Okay, all right. He's like the theological version of Van Wilder. He will be in school forever, people. And write that down. Write that down. So last but not least, we have Nick Ahern, aspiring screenwriter, and some of you will recognize him as the voice or co-host of Dual Impressions, the Dual Impressions segment of our podcast. What's up, Nick?
Not much. Thanks for bringing me back.
No problem. And, of course, I'm your host, Calvin Moore. You guys know me. I think I already introduced myself, but just in case I didn't, there's my name again. Like, I'm a hip-hop artist. I'm Calvin, in case you forget. I'm Calvin. I'm going to say my name a lot during this podcast.
You're Calvin. Shameless.
I am shameless, Calvin.
You're a shameless self-promoter.
I'm going to drop the mic and walk away. Okay, so let's talk about New Year's resolutions. In 2012, did any of you guys have a New Year's resolution? And if you did you keep it?
Well, my resolution is usually not to have a resolution, and I think I was pretty successful at keeping that one. I think I ended up not making one.
Gotcha. You're like us you're like me when I was in college. We had these things called social clubs, and so I decided to start the anti-social club by not joining a social club, and I never joined a social club, and my club had lots of members because lots of people just didn't join. So you were a de facto member. But either way, we had a little bit.
Logical success.
Yes, it was great. Okay, so anybody else? New Year's resolutions in 2012?
Nope, not for me. And I make it a point not to do that, so I'm kind of with I'd be firmly in Calvin's club right now, except I wouldn't be.
You're in my club without even knowing it. Anybody else? Any New Year's resolutions from 2012?
Am I the only one who had one?
Yeah. No, I didn't have one either.
Wow.
Wow.
Well, mine's really pathetic, but it's better than the rest, I guess. I recently, in the past couple of years, moved out to Chicago, and so my New Year's resolution was to eat dinner one time at Harold's Chicken Shack, because everybody talked about how great the chicken was, and I had yet to do it. So I made that my New Year's resolution before 2012 ends to have Harold's Chicken.
Okay, and you did it?
Still
and
have not
conclusion?
Done it.
Conclusion?
No,
in conclusion, was it resolution worthy?
I haven't done it yet. I have 22 days left to eat this chicken.
Okay, see, now, Wayne, I don't know if that's a resolution or if that's like a bucket list item.
No, it's a resolution because it had to happen this year, and it was a change from the year before. It's a resolution. It's just a one-off. It's a simple one-off resolution that... Still, I'm about to break it if I don't get my act together this month.
You need to get on that. You need to get on that, Wayne, because if you don't do it this year, then your resolution next year is going to be, like, out of guilt. Like, now you have to go to Harold's Chicken out of guilt, not out of desire.
I made it because I never keep my resolution, so I wanted something keepable, and I'm still about to fail. David, you're in
You really need to swing low. How hard is it to go to a restaurant and get some chicken?
They're everywhere. There's like 20 of them in the city, too.
I think you should go tomorrow.
I just don't want to go by myself. I would feel so pathetic sitting in a restaurant by myself. So.
Do they have a drive-through? Do you have pickup? Whatever. Just get something.
It's pickup. I could do that. But, yeah, I need to get that together. I completely forgot about it till about half an hour ago.
Well, you're not the only one who made a New Year's resolution. I did make a New Year's resolution last year. And I think it was that quintessential Christian New Year's resolution that I was going to read the Bible more this year. And I'm going to be pretty frank and honest, even though I run a pretty, respectable Christian website and I'm involved heavily at my church. I did not read the Bible anywhere near as much as I should have, and that was my New Year's resolution. As a matter of fact, my church... together over a 40-day period, read the Bible cover to cover, Genesis to Revelation, and I did not involve myself in that whatsoever. Probably because, 40 days, it's like blowing out your adrenal gland reading that much, but in addition to doing, grad work. But it was just kind of interesting that I did not keep my New Year's resolution, so much so that that's probably not going to be my New Year's resolution in 2013. But either way, that was mine. It's not that I didn't read the Bible, but I definitely did not do it anywhere near to what I want it to be doing this year. So then, that being said, let's move on to 2013, new year, new chance to make some resolutions. Anybody got any resolutions for 2013?
My resolution is to help Calvin Ward get his resolution, because now I'm really depressed that you didn't read your Bible in a year.
Thanks. I need the accountability. Your resolution is to be my accountability. That's great.
Yeah, cool.
Anybody else?
Well, I can say I'm still not planning on making a New Year's resolution. I make resolutions rather frequently, but not at any particular time. That's just an interesting way to do things.
How about you, Justin?
No, I don't have anything.
This is the most boring podcast ever.
I'm sorry. I just don't. If I feel that there's a change that needs to be made, generally it's God who's telling me it needs to be made, and I'm not going to dare to tell him that he has to wait till the new year. I'm going to do it now.
Gotcha. That was Jonah's problem. He wanted God to wait until the new year before he went to Nineveh. How about you, Wayne? If you don't get to this chicken place, are you Harold's chicken? Are you gonna make that again your resolution for 2013, or you got a different resolution altogether?
Well, I feel like if I can't pull off making it to Chicken Shack in 365 days, I might just give up on resolutions altogether. So, tell you what, when I go to dinner and get this chicken sometime this week, I'll think through what my resolution will be. But for now, I'm still focused on this year's.
All right, look, I'm going to call you every day this week, or text you at least, and see if you went to Harold's Chicken to get some chicken. Matter of fact, you know what? I'll call a Harold's Chicken. I'll find the closest one to you. Make a reservation. And I know it's not even a place that takes reservations.
Yeah.
So they're just going to be impressed that I'm calling and making a reservation for you.
That'll be awesome, David. You're living in Chicago now, right?
I am indeed.
Like in the city?
No, not in the city. I'm in the suburbs, Wheaton area, but I'm right next to the train station. So ironically, I'm closer to the city than I would be if I were in the city.
Wow. Good point. Well, all right. We should get together. I will treat you to some chicken.
I'd like that. That'd be good. I've never had this chicken. I could make that my pre-New Year's resolution to try getting chicken there before the New Year.
Like the tailgate version of making a resolution.
Cool. That's awesome. I swear to everybody, this podcast episode is not brought to you by Harold's Chicken. Just saying. It's not.
But I don't know.
In no way, shape, or form. Is it Harold's or Howard's Chicken? I'm not in Chicago. We don't have any of those here.
It's
Harold's? It is Harold's Chicken. Okay. All right. Well, I actually am making some New Year's resolutions. I've already kind of started on some of them. One, I'm going to I want to go out of state for something other than school. Like in January, January 4th, by the time people are hearing this, I'll be in Oregon for a week with my grad class. That doesn't count. I want to go out of state for something that has nothing to do with school. And I don't normally do that kind of thing. I'm kind of a homebody. I love Michigan. But I just want to get out of the state. Even if that means going to Ohio to go to Cedar Point Amusement Park, I'll do that. Memorizing bits of scripture. I like to just kind of learn and memorize things so that I guess they'll come out of me at weird times as I go through situations. It's really kind of cool. In the past, I memorized scripture, and to see the impact on my life that it had through that. I think it's a little bit easier of a pill to swallow than to read my Bible every day. I know I should read it every day. They tell us that as kids, but sometimes I don't. So maybe dwelling on the same text every day and memorizing it and committing it to heart could be cool. And then the third one is I'm going to teach myself a new language or try to learn a new language. I've purchased a Rosetta Stone, and I got Italian. I like Italian movies, so I'm going to try to learn Italian to the point that by the end of 2013, I can watch one Italian movie without the subtitles on and kind of understand what's going on. That's what I'm hoping for. So we will see. We'll see if I make it to the end of 2013 having done any of those three things. If I can get one of them done, I'd be happy, but I would love to aim for all three. So that's my New Year's resolution. Now, here's my question, and some of you already hit on this a little bit. Why do people make resolutions? Because, like, at the gym, everybody on January 1st to, like, January 17th is, like, at the gym crazy all over the machines, and then it kind of thins out in February. So people make these resolutions. I'm going to get in shape and all that kind of stuff, or I'm going to smoke less, or I'm not going to eat as many fatty foods, or yada, yada, yada. They make these resolutions. Why do people at the new year decide to make resolutions rather than throughout the year, kind of like Justin was saying, hey, you know, God comes through with a directive or something needs to change in my life and it gets done now. Why do people choose January 1st, this date to make these resolutions?
Well, my opinion on that, and I mean, it's hard for other people because truthfully, this is something which I don't even really know where it comes from etymologically, but it seems like it's just a new beginning. So it's a new chance to change something, I suppose. That's what's been explained to me. I never really quite fully understood the significance of the new year myself. So your question's one which I think I've always been kind of wondering. Anyone else have any insights at all?
I think that this is probably one of those things where we're lazy, and so we like to put things off. And so let's say we know we've got to change something in September or August or June, and we go, you know what, the new year is a good time to start that. It gives you 6 months to continue doing what you're doing, and then when the new year comes, you do it for your 14 or 10 days and then recognize that you're not going to do this. You just let it go and you continue to do what you're doing. I think it's kind of a mob mentality. Everybody else is doing it, so I should do it too. And it's one of those things that for me, if you're going to do something, do something. Don't sit around and talk about it. There's a lot of people in the world and a lot of people in the church who like to sit around and talk, but don't do a whole lot of anything. And, I think that the New Year's resolution concept kind of plays into that. And we see just how many people are about actually getting something accomplished by how many people actually do something with their resolution, which is not very many.
Gotcha.
Yeah, I think when I think about New Year's, one of you said it's kind of like that mob mentality, where everybody else is doing it, so I'm gonna do it too, and I think that's very true. It's like, oh, New Year's, I'm gonna do this. I've been putting, like you said, Justin, people are lazy, they put it off, and well, here's this arbitrary date where all things are new, so I'm gonna try something new, and they do it for a few days, and then they kind of wipe out. But, you know, there are people who continue forward, and that date, they just needed that. They needed that date. One of the things I find interesting about people who do keep their New Year's resolutions, I talked to a few people at work today about, you know, whether they did or didn't, and some did and some didn't. But those who did said that, I was able to keep it because of this person or that person. And so there is something to kind of the mob mentality when it takes on a communal aspect, when someone's there to kind of egg you on to continue to do what you're supposed to do. Maybe that's what the church should do. Maybe that's the message of the church. But maybe during the middle of the year, it's like, gosh, if I do this, if I resolve to do this, it's pretty much me on my own going to the gym, opening up a membership. But hey, I know Sally, Jim, you know, John and Ray are also getting gym memberships. Maybe we can spur one another on to good works or workouts, so to speak. No, I guess I'm trying to be punny there, but maybe the mob mentality, maybe there is something to that. Maybe there is some merit to this whole arbitrary January 1st date of getting out there and changing something in your life. So I guess that's why I keep making resolutions in my own life, whether I keep them or not. I thought that was interesting to find out that people who kept them by and large had other people around them to kind of spur them on.
Yeah, I think that is really interesting. And I think I want to push back at the mob mentality, because I think, and you pointed this out, Calvin, that's really describing community, which isn't such a bad thing, in my opinion.
Yeah, I agree with that.
I mean, what you have in resolutions is essentially another way of talking about repentance. I think our version, the Christianized version of repentance, is more about saying you're sorry and seeking forgiveness, but repentance having this idea of turning around and changing something and doing something new, a new way of life, that is what a resolution is. So having an annual day where as a community we practice repentance, I know I'm giving a lot, I'm really giving the benefit of the doubt to New Year's resolutions. In its heart, I think it's a really good idea, and it's something, I mean, it's Yom Kippur for everybody. It's like an annual day of atonement. So I like it. I think that, like you were saying, Calvin, it might be good for the church to embrace that a little bit more, whether it's on New Year's Day or some other day.
Yeah, and it's like you said, it's like you don't want to go eat chicken by yourself. So, I mean, that kind of speaks to the heart of that. I mean, at the same time, I do agree with Justin that we're kind of lazy and want to put it off until this magic date appears. But for those who are getting it done and are doing it in community, I find that very, very, very interesting, and I find value in that.
I think there is another implication with that community thing, which is I think is pertinent in terms of any kind of goal setting and goal keeping, which is that it's sort of like if I want to not eat fatty foods, it's not enough for me to just not eat fatty foods. I have to fill the place which was satisfied by fatty foods with something else. And I think when we're trying to change something like go work out more or eat less fatty food, sometimes you don't have something you can replace it with, but if you can have that community step in there, I think just psychologically, it's a lot easier to do, because instead of not doing something, you're proactively interacting with people. And I think that makes it a whole lot easier.
Yeah, and I think that's a good place to kind of end this conversation, to wind it down. So those of you who are listening, New Year's resolutions, did you make one? Did you make one in 2012, and did you keep it in 2013? Have you made resolutions? Do you think it's kind of like what Justin was saying, and some of us agreed with, that it's, you know, you should just make changes throughout the year when you should? Or is there something to this kind of magical January 1st date, and a group of people say, I'm going to do this, and so that's kind of what makes it work for some. So we would love to get your feedback, leave some comments, take the poll, and tell us what you're thinking, and write us at info@thechristianmanifesto.com. We would love to hear your thoughts on our roundtable segments. Give us ideas about what we should be talking about in the future. We have a few in the cooker for 2013. I have made some personal resolutions as to how to make this whole program better, but we would love to hear from you as well. Thanks so much for listening.
I suspect, welcome to the new year. I actually don't ever know which one is going to air first, because Calvin really just likes to keep us on our toes. So I'm pretty sure this is the first one. So happy new year. Hope you had a good Christmas. We both enjoyed our time off. We're ready to get back right back into reviewing, even if I can't speak. I've got Nick with me. Nick, say Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas.
There you go. That was nice and happy. I'm glad I have that control over you still. You're never quite sure when that's going to come in handy. and we're here to talk about Show Baraka's release, Talented 10. This comes out January 15th, so probably just after this airs, because I think this is going up probably on the 11th, would be my guess. And so I've had it for, you know, a little over a month. I've been listening to it almost nonstop because I really wanted to give it a fair listen. This is Shobaraka's first solo release since leaving Reach Records. He's performed elsewhere, of course. He was on High Society Collective, which was one of our favorite albums from last year. I think it made our top 10. It should have if it didn't, because it was one of the best albums from last year, even though it barely scraped into 2012. It was January 1st.
Oh yeah, I remember that. Yeah, that was a good album.
Yeah, and Shobaraka has appeared elsewhere. He did the Hello Revolution thing where he did the track... what was it called? Kill Jesus, Praise Judas. That everyone was kind of like, what's that title mean? Etc, etc. And then, so he's still doing all these group things, but this is his first solo release. It's put out, I think, on his own indie label, Lions and Liars Records or something like that. It's not through High Society at this point. We'll see if that ever becomes a label. But, all that to say, I'm excited. Shobaraka is one of those guys that I've always enjoyed his work. Ever since his second album. I couldn't stand his first album. I'm sorry, Sho, if you're listening to this. Maybe you are, maybe you aren't. Regardless, I didn't like his first album. But after that, he got better. And ever since he's left Reach, he's only gotten way better. That was, in all honesty, that was when he hit his stride. Everything he's done post-Reach has been his best work. Excellent. I'm really excited about it. I'm not going to tip my hat just yet. Yeah, Nick, what did you think of this one?
Let's see.
That sigh, Nick.
The album you and I mentioned, Games album.
Okay, Jesus Peace. Yeah.
Yeah, Jesus Peace. Which Lecrae and all that's kind of cool. So we have to review it now. So now I four star.
All right.
This album, I think, is probably the strongest Christian album I think I've ever heard that's consistent, and it's on par with Propaganda's Excellence.
Okay, which was one of your favorite albums from last year. I remember when we reviewed that.
Yeah, that was truly an excellent, like, no yeah, pun intended, it's an excellent album. And this, I honestly wasn't sure what to expect, because when he left Reach, I'm not sure why he left Reach, obviously, but... coming into this album, I'm sitting at work, I turn it on, and honestly, I was just not expecting it. It just kind of came out of nowhere. It's like, oh, it's going to be one of those albums. Or I hope it was, because for me, it's either the first song turns to either make or break the album. And so I was just actually really impressed with it. What was your favorite track? Because I have like four or five, and I don't want
to... Oh man, it's really tough to narrow them down. I really like, so he titles the tracks chapters, and that's the way I remember them. I really like chapter 4, Mahalia. That it has a bit of a long introduction that I think could have been trimmed down. But overall, it's one of the best tracks on the album. It's upbeat, it's fun. It features a guy named Deuce Banner, who I don't know, wasn't familiar with before this, and still am not. But it's one of the best verses on the album. It's such a fun track, upbeat, well done. I really like Ali, chapter 6. I really like Denzel, Madoff. I mean, I really, honestly, I'd be quicker to list the tracks I don't like, to be honest.
Yeah, same here. Those tracks you mentioned, I liked the first one, Bethesda.
Yeah.
The one misfire for me, and I think it is a big misfire, was Mrs. Chapter 5 with featuring JR.
Yeah.
I had to three or four times. I'm like, am I missing something here? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Or even more better, I'm trying to throw things in the ear and different. What am I not seeing here, or what am I missing? Just know it got decidedly worse.
Yeah, I'm glad the track is there from a sort of an album standpoint. I'm glad that he takes some time to sort of write about his wife and all of this. But at the same time, it's like, that's a skip track in my mind. That's not one that I'm gonna go back and listen to on a regular basis.
No, there's nothing. It's not a, like, okay, putting it differently. It's not a, oh my gosh, I can't believe he did this. It's like, oh, it's cool. Like, the lyricism is pretty solid. It's just the way the track sounds is basically I hated the way the track sounds. Like, I'm not gonna use words, but yeah. Lyrically there's nothing like, oh my gosh, this is so bad. There's nothing like that.
Right.
There was one line, I forget which song it is off the top of my head, but he said, "I'm like the Bible, not a bad verse anymore," stuff like that. And that it said with the swagger of like a Kanye or a Jay. Like, you know, yeah. Verse, which I know it's going for because he peppers that stuff a whole lot. I thought it was dope. But the way he said it, I actually thought that it was like the perfect response, like a dip. I was like, oh!
I think he's gonna pull a lot of comparisons to Kanye, and not just because he references Kanye at least once. He's got a line about knowing that Jesus walks, so he's never going to hell. But even aside from that, like, I think stylistically and even the production on the album ends up sounding a little bit like a Kanye record, which I was surprised at. I don't associate Show with Kanye. I associate guys like Swoop with Kanye as far as sound goes, and I know that they've worked together extensively, but that was not what I was expecting from this album.
I got a Kanye in a lot of production, kind of like the high voice and the saxophones, you know, that kind of stuff. But his voice actually, this is a compliment, sounded like Common.
Yeah.
Like, the more I heard, like, this dude sounds like Common. This is really cool. And I thought that was the coolest thing.
Right.
So, I mean, except for that one track, which, I'm not gonna lie, it's a pretty big miss for me, which is incredible.
Yeah, no, that's spot on.
The big track that a lot of people didn't have words over.
Yeah, I don't actually think it should be the most controversial track. I'm gonna get that out there right away, because I think the message behind it is solid and spot on. That said, it's going to be the most talked about track. Almost guarantee it. So we're gonna get to that.
If I were to draw a comparison, it almost sounds like anticipating the reaction will be something similar to Church Clothes, where the song itself really isn't that controversial, but
right.
The reaction to it for some reason will spur kind of a, oh my gosh, you know, how
I can't believe he said that, right?
Yeah.
So before we get to that, just a brief disclaimer for our listeners. There is a little bit of swearing on this album. That may come as a surprise for those of you who are familiar with the work of guys who've been on Reach Records or even Show Baraka up until this point. But there is some, and Nick and I are going to be okay quoting that. There is a bit that we won't quote, but that'll be clear. But just so everybody knows, that's where we're going with this. That said, here comes the controversy. The track called Jim Crow. This, I remember when Calvin first sent me the album, he hops on chat and he goes, "Have you downloaded Show's album yet?" And I said, "No." And he said, "Download it and listen to Jim Crow." And I was like, "Wait, he has a track called Jim Crow?" He's like, "Yeah." And the chorus has the N-word in it. And I was like, "Oh, well, okay then. That's going to be something different." Yeah, so that's where a lot of the controversy for this album is probably going to lie, whether or not it should, which we can talk about in a minute. But that track was a surprise to me. I suspect it was to you as well.
Yeah, because I'm like, wait, did he just say what I think he said? That I listened to it before. I think it was the same kind of thing I listened to it before. I'm like, no, he's definitely saying what I think he's saying. And oh, he's saying more words. What did he drop? He dropped, there was Ass, I think, in it.
That's in the track with Susie Rock, which actually comes from Susie Rock, not from Show.
Okay, gotcha. But what's said in this one? Because
well, you've got you have an N-word in the chorus, and then in the third verse, he says he uses the word bitch is the other one that's really going to get people.
Yeah, I don't know. But let's in context. I mean, I listened to it 3 or 4 times, but I was so struck by the fact that he would use the N-word that I think I need to listen to it like a couple more times just to really get, you know, what's going on. But maybe you have to explain it to me, because I feel like, even though I listened to it a couple of times, I feel like I'm still missing something. Like, so what are your thoughts on, like, the context of everything?
Well, and so here's the reason I don't think this track should be that controversial. The track is entirely about racism. It's entirely about people who don't think racism still exists. It's entirely about people who who want to marginalize black people and turn them into white people, or turn them into entertainment, or extort them for money, or whatever.
Oh, right. Yeah,
and so the entire track is centered around that. And in light of that, I actually think the language works. The end of the track is just chanting, like, go Jim Crow, go monkey, go. And then Show comes over and just calmly says, are you entertained? Like, are you entertained? Is that really what you were going for? Did he entertain you? And there's sort of this biting punch to that, where he's almost just saying, like, it's really sad that you think that, like, all black people are for entertainment, or all black people are good for dancing and putting on a show. And it's kind of a biting track. Now, I think it's well done, and I think it's appropriate, even. I'm not entirely sure that in his shoes, well, I can't fully put myself in his shoes, but I'm not entirely sure if he had come to me and said, should I do the track this way, I would have agreed with it. That said, I understand why he did, and I don't think I have a problem with it.
No, that actually reminds me, because you said the marginalization and the finances and stuff like that. And I've been talking with my girlfriend Allison, you know, we're mentioning just the level of, you know, just racism that we miss or we kind of gloss over. And just this, I mean, you know, or even more interesting, had you talked to me about this, you know, maybe 3 or 4 years ago, my first thought, racism, there's still that thing, we still have that.
Right.
And, you know, and so it is an aggressive, it's almost like, what was it? There's a track by Luca Fiasco called Bitch Bad. And he basically goes through the track deconstructing why people assign the label bitch to a woman, in what context the man says that, how the woman adopts the label, and just this complete communication breakdown, you know, and basically the chorus is literally bitch bad, woman good, lady better, but it's this you can tell he's so condescending. It's like he's talking to a 2-year-old, you know, you know, this bad, lady good. It's just this really kind of, do I really have to spell this out for you? And thinking about that in Show's track, I got kind of the same thing. I was not nearly as condescending as Lupe is.
Right.
But you can tell it's much more, with Lupe, you're kind of getting kind of a clinical lecture. With this, you're getting almost like a journal entry. Like, it's very intimate. He's very raw. He's not holding anything back.
Right.
And it's just the idea of, and it's a perfect song that fits within the album, because you have Kanye, you have Jay, you have, you know, the talk about money, status, power, but you're still this to them, you know. And it's culturally fascinating, just the track. I mean, it alone, I think, it doesn't make the album, but it certainly adds just this major layer to it. And just how, and I think the big thing is, too, it's how we react to the album could more or less prove his point, you know what I mean?
Right.
And so, or how we overreact, or could overreact, if that makes sense.
Yeah, and here's the thing. There are other tracks on here that say things that people will likely disagree with, but those tracks aren't going to get the attention that this does, simply because of the language, which I think is going to be, if I have a complaint about the methodology, it's that from a practical standpoint, he has to know that this is going to be, it was a risk, right? Like, it's risky to put out a track like that. Because on the one hand, if it works, it's going to hammer your point home really hard. It's really going to get through to people. But if it doesn't, you're just going to alienate everybody who is put off by that. White or black or anybody else. Yeah, no, it's the same issue. I actually thought of that as I was listening to this one. That said, hopefully most people who listen to this album will be able to see the message, even if they disagree with the method. So even if I come away at the end of the day, which I don't, but even if I came away saying, I think Show made a mistake, hopefully I can at least say, but he was trying to fight racism, right? Like, he was trying to do something good, even if I think his method ended up false. That said, I don't think it is. I think he actually pulls that track off well. The track prior to it is all about... sort of economic disparity among the wealthy and the poor. And I feel like that's going to hit really hard on a lot of Republicans and a lot of, which, you know, a lot of the Christian circle is more stereotypically Republican. I think that's going to hit people who are sort of socially and economically conservative, maybe harder than the Jim Crow track. But people aren't going to hear it because they're not going to hear the N-word. They're not going to hear bitch. They're not going to hear sort of this strong language, what we associate as vulgar, that really perks the ear up in a way that some of the other tracks don't.
Yeah.
Even tracks like Ali, where he's sort of talking about excellence and how for many years he was afraid to stand up and face it because he didn't want to be prideful. He didn't want to be boasting and arrogant. But then just kind of comes to grips with that and says, you know, maybe God made us for something bigger. Maybe he made us to be excellent. And we should just embrace that. And even that is going to get some pushback from sort of this this Christian hip-hop culture that wants to say, don't brag about anything. Don't talk about anything about yourself, et cetera, et cetera.
From my recollection, he paraphrases Paul in his letters to the Corinthians, or at least he said something that sounded very much like Paul.
Yeah,
don't let me brag, but, you know, I'm not bragging, but, and kind of that wonderful little rhetorical thing that Paul loves to do, obviously.
Right, and I'm just spelling out what I think Show Barack is doing. I don't think it's a problem. I don't have those issues with the album, but I'm foreseeing a lot of listeners of Christian hip hop having issues with tracks like that, but they're going to ignore them because of the racism track, which I think is sad, because the racism track seems like it should be the least controversial as far as topic goes. Maybe not as far as methodology, but as far as topic goes, like, who in this room or any room wants to stand up and say racism is good, we should have it? Like, hopefully nobody. And if they do, hopefully they'll listen to this track and be convicted, or hopefully they'll just not talk to anybody ever again, right? Like anybody who actively says racism is a good thing is a very bad person. Like, we can all agree with that. So that track is definitely gonna catch some flack. I think it's a good track. I've played it for a couple people, just because I wanted some wisdom from people who I think are good thinkers, and everyone who I played it for said, wow, that's a powerful track.
Yeah,
good on him. Good luck surviving the onslaught.
Yeah, pretty much.
Which,
I don't know, I'm impressed that he just went there, and it's, you honor, I think the big thing too is Christians, we may not like the methodology, but you honor the intention. And it's not as if he needs to actually, you know what I mean? What's the way to say it?
You want to, like, consider the heart, not necessarily the actual practice or something?
I mean, the practice, you know, fits into it, because you can't just, you know, ignore the practice.
Right.
But you honor, it's kind of like, he did this, but he did a good thing. It's like, well, he, you know, so-and-so alive, but they saved a lot of Jews during the Holocaust, you know, kind of thing.
Okay.
And I'm not comparing, obviously, racism and the Holocaust in terms of that. Well, maybe I am, I don't know. But you get my point. It's like, there are some things where you kind of look at it and go, this is a bigger deal than such and such a thing.
Yeah.
And so, I don't know. There we go. We should use a little more discernment and prioritize certain things more than others.
Right. And that's the thing. I just hope that the message isn't completely lost because of the way it's presented. Because it's a good message.
Yeah.
I think that's my short conclusion. I'm not entirely sure how I feel about the wisdom of this method. That said, I think the message comes across loud and clear, and it's something I'm going to be thinking about more because of how loud and clear it was, because of the method even. So even with my hesitation there, it's still something that's going to stick, going to sit with me, and it's not going to be a track I quickly forget.
No, for sure. It's an incredibly well-done track.
All right, we've talked about this album for longer than we do most albums. I think understandably so, but we should start to wrap it up. Do you want to wrap up real quick?
Yeah, mine will be quick. For the most part, this album is incendiary, it's provocative, it's not easily digested, nor should it be. It's very much it's a thinking album. It's not something you can just turn on and, you know, jam to. It requires thought, it requires discernment, it requires basically your entire, it requires you that you actually listen to it. And so I think I think it's a by far probably one of the best albums I've heard this year. Actually, it's probably the best album I've heard a whole lot. But overall, it, with the one exception of that track you and I both mentioned, it's an astoundingly complex. Yeah, it's an astoundingly complex, provocative. And it's overall fascinating album. And so I think I gave it a 4.5 out of 5.
Okay. Yeah, this is Sho's first solo album, and man, is it a doozy. This album begs to be listened to, and begs to be listened to carefully. If you just listen sort of on the surface level and kind of half ignore it, you're probably not even going to check in until you hear the N-word or until you hear Hit, frankly. And that's sad, because there's a lot of good content before that, and there's a lot of good content after that. Hopefully people won't get stuck refreshing that song and just playing it over and over until they decide to either burn Sho at the stake or just ignore him forever, or praise him as being a genius, because one track doesn't make you a star, one track doesn't damn you either, hopefully. Overall, I really like this album. Start to finish, it's some of the best production that we've heard in Christian hip-hop in a long time. It's right up there with last year's Beautiful Eulogy, Swoop, High Society Collective, even Church Clothes, Gravity, and Propaganda's Excellent. This is right up there with some of these great albums. And I think it's the first time outside of High Society Collective that Sho's been up there. Lions and Liars was good, but it was still before Reach really took off, in as far as their production goes. So, excellent album. I think the only tracks that really stand out to me as not that amazing are Misses, and then I'm really unsure about the track that features Lee Green and Theory Has It. I really, really like both of those guys. The track has a bit of an odd beat that I'm not entirely sure I'm sold on yet. That said, Theory Has Its verse is excellent, and I love hearing Lee Green on a track. So overall, I think I'm going to agree with you. I'm going to do a 4.5. It's only missing half a star because of Misses and a little bit of the track Me, because I'm still not sold on the beat. So 4.5 out of 5 is a really good score from us.
Yeah, that's cream of the crop right there.
Yeah.
As well, you know, that album is cream of the crop.
But. Yeah, I think Excellent scored a little higher than that, but I think that's it, realistically. Excellent. I mean, this is right up there. This is a really good album. I really recommend everybody go listen to this. If nothing else, you can make up your own mind about this track that's gonna generate a lot of buzz.
And of course, contact us or write us on Facebook or Twitter or the site. We'd love to hear your thoughts.
Yeah, you can. So. I mean, you can contact us through the Christian Manifesto. We've both got contact info. You can hit me on Twitter at James F. Arnold. What's your Twitter handle? I don't remember.
I think it's just Nick Ahern.
I think so too.
I was not feeling particularly inventive that day.
Yeah, I always get your emails mixed up with your Twitters, so I'm never quite sure which it is. But yeah, hit us up. Talk to us. We'd love to hear your feedback. Thanks for listening. This has been Dual Impressions of 2013, and we're starting it off with a bang. You said Merry Christmas earlier. Say Happy New Year, Nick.
Happy New Year, Nick.
There we go. Back to the same old jokes.
Well, hey, everybody, you have reached the talk back segment of our podcast. And as you all know, we love to have kind of up and coming voices or established voices within the Christian culture, whether it be authors or whether it be artists. And today we have on the line with us hip hop recording artist Sho Baraka. Hey, Sho, how are you today?
Doing pretty good. Thank you for having me back.
Hey, no problem. Yeah, we have talked with you in the past, and since then our format has kind of changed. So thanks for being willing to shorten things up and join us on our long form podcast today. But you're hopping on the line to talk with us about your newest album coming up, The Talented Tenth. Talk a little bit about this project, because I know a lot has happened since your last project. I mean, this is your first one. Not on Reach Records and not as a part of the High Society Collective, as you know, on a collaborative album as your first solo album since leaving that major label. Talk a little bit about, I guess, what's happened In the meantime, between leaving that that label and your previous album to what you're doing now with this particular album?
Yeah, that's a whole podcast right there by itself.
Well, you have 2 minutes to answer that question.
Yeah, exactly. A lot of growth has happened, a lot of faith, just the idea of being able to process through what it's like to be an independent artist and to, like, go forward with that. It's taught me a lot in that process, and it taught me to take control of my own career and think, like, you know, critically think through, like, what do you want to be known for? What are the things that you find significant, and how do you want to pursue those things in the next coming months, years, so on and so forth? And so it's 3 years ago I dropped the Lions Liars album. Been about almost 2 years since I've left the label. And so in that process, man, it's really just been a lot of growth, a lot of trying to pick up many different hats in a sense of defining who Show is, not just as a hip-hop artist, but as an, I like to call an artisan, a guy who has his hands in different art. So, and here we are with this new album, Talented 10th, is one of the few things that I'm engaging in this coming year.
Okay. So yeah, let's talk about this project, because it is decidedly different than your previous projects. Again, I got the album sent to me early. It was serviced to our site, and so I was I'm always happy to get albums early and gloat all over Twitter that I have. I've listened to it. One of my other guys on the site has listened to it as well, and we've been discussing it for about a week and a half, 2 weeks now. This project decidedly different than your older material. I always thought that your stuff kind of required more thought to begin with, that your material always required a little bit more thought and deeper contemplation. Talented 10th is what I would consider probably one of the most adult Christian albums I've ever listened to, not in terms of like it being sexual, but in terms of it requiring more of the intellect and the mind and the soul and whatnot. So
yeah,
talk a little bit about this.
My next album is gonna be more sexual.
Good. I'm gonna have to pass on that one. Just gonna be honest right now. So talk a little bit about this project, and has this been a natural shift for you, or what? Why the Talented 10?
Yeah, so it is natural. I felt like this is kind of like the direction I've always wanted to go in. I've never really been a youth group rapper. I've never really been a person who felt like I made music for the Christian market per se. You know, although I do want to be heard in the Christian market, although I do want to reach youth groups, that's not my priority. You know what I mean? And so I felt like I tried to do some of it on Lions and Liars, my previous album. But on this album, I figured like there's no point and going independent. There's no point in being like making this drastic change in life and just doing the same kind of stuff that I've always been doing. Take control of your market, take control of your demographic, your brand, and do what you want to do, Show. And so that's what this is. And Talented 10th came from just the passion that I've had in reading and studying a lot of black authors of our past. And W.E. Du Bois is one of those brothers who has been influential in my life for a long time. I went to a HBCU for college at Tuskegee University, so I learned a lot about Booker T and the kind of debate between him and W.E.B. Du Bois. So, and I just felt like the Talented 10th is a natural kind of like biblical principle of discipleship, and how those who are talented, those who are exceptional, should use their gifts and talents for the benefit of other people. And so this album is kind of like an observation of culture, a deconstruction of things, and trying to reconstruct an idea of how do we affect change in these areas that I'm addressing on the album.
Okay. Now, one of the things that I have noticed, I guess kind of going back to Lions and Liars, track 7 on that project, there was a spoken word piece by Tom Aeson called I'm Black. And I remember back when we interviewed prior, you said you are, I'm probably going to bastardize this quote, but you said you're very pro-black, not over and against all white people or Hispanic people or Asian people or whatever, but you are very much into, you know, African-American culture and realizing how beautiful that is and realizing that we have something to offer to the culture, you know, as part of the larger culture. This album, to me, is a continuation of that particular track. Everything seems to be very pro-Black on this album, which I thought was good, but I'm wondering exactly how it will be received. Would you say that that is the case, that it's pro-Black, or that's just kind of a misunderstanding on my part?
I like the way you defined kind of like what you thought my communication of that understanding was. Like, as long as you understand it in a biblical sense, like kind of how Paul had an affection and an affinity for his brothers, his Jewish brothers and sisters, and how you hear him in Romans, like 9, 10, 11, and 12, talking about how he would do anything to see his people come to know the Lord. That's kind of like the same affinity that I have, like when I speak of my pro, like, understanding of Black history, Black culture, because I do feel like we've swept our understanding of Black culture, especially Christian culture, as far as it goes in America, under the rug for the appeasement of Puritans, for the appeasement of, the Reform culture. And we felt like we have nothing to offer the Reform Protestant movement in this world, when the reality is that there's a lot of honorable men and women who served alongside our white brothers and sisters to bring enlightenment to our culture, and even non-Christians who did wonderful things to bring the advancement of our culture and other cultures. So I would say yes, that's an accurate statement, but not in the negative sense where it's like I am at the downfall of other cultures, kind of.
Right, you're not, at the Black Panther rallies or anything like that. So now there's a contemporary Christian artist by the name of Derek Webb who has caught a lot of flack for his Stockholm Syndrome album. Some Christian bookstores wouldn't even carry it because he had a song that kind of suggested that maybe homosexuality isn't the biggest issue that the church should be discussing. Right. And of course, everybody focused on that track and nobody paid attention to the other incendiary things that he was saying all throughout the album. That was much more provocative than that particular track. Now, Talented 10 features a track called Jim Crow, which features a line that I'm going to let you say. I know that I'm comfortable with the word, but so I think personally, to me, the best track on this album is Madoff, and I want you to talk about that. I think that's one of the most incendiary tracks, period, on this album. But I think a lot of people are going to focus on the words in chapter 9, Jim Crow, track 9. Is it true, first off, did you change the name of this track? I heard that it was supposed to be what the line is.
It was supposed to be Nigga Island.
Okay, so the word's out there, people. Nigga Island. Nigga. I'm going to say it. All right, there it is. It's out. I'm sure I offended most of the people listening right now.
Yes,
so you have this line, I guess I'm stuck here on Nigga Island, and I think the message of this song is pretty powerful. My question is, are you worried, given that you do already have a fan base? I know you're trying to reach more than just youth groups, but you do have, people in youth groups who are your fan base who will still buy your stuff. Are you afraid at all of alienating some of the people who support you the most with this particular track?
No, I don't think the whole process of me becoming an independent artist was part of, this is part of that, like announcing, like, look, you won't get the same kind of music you got before. And that's the risk that I took in putting myself where I am now, understanding that there's going to be some risk taking and possibly some fans lost, some people saying, yeah, I understand what you're doing, but I choose to no longer support you. And those are things that I have to accept. And so in making this track, I realized, like, I felt like the message I felt like the conversation that's going to be had because of this song is greater than, you know, selling maybe a thousand records to somebody who doesn't understand Show Baraka nor the causes that I fight for and believe in. Now, if I'm going to take a song like this off and get 5 more shows a year, sell a couple more thousand, I felt like that's exactly what failure is in my book, because that's not what I make music for. I don't make music. I make music to be provocative in some senses and to provoke change and to get people to think and talk and build dialogue. But all that to say, I did create a clean version of the song for some people.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah. When I was back before I went to college, I wrote a blog post. This is back before I really took blogging seriously, but I wrote something. And it was called The Church of Oral Gratification, speaking exactly what you think I'm talking about when I say that. And I got a lot of people who, like all my Christian friends, hated that I had said that. They totally disregarded the message, hated what I had said. But all of my non-Christian friends were like, man, I wish more people would talk like this. I didn't find it crass. I got your point. It made it even more... it hit home even harder for me because you were willing to go to that place and not mince words like so many Christians do in my life. So I'm hoping that is the case, but one person did say something to me in doing that sticks to me to this day. I still think that I was okay to do what I did, but I'm still willing to hear out what people say. And this guy named Doug said, you know, I think what you've done is you've put a fat kid on a teeter totter. You got the fat kid on one side and you got the skinny kid on the other, you know, your legs flailing in the air. And that's, you know, the skinny kid is the message that you want to be heard. And the fat kid is your methodology. And so I really thought about that. He said, you know, your methodology has outweighed your message. And so now people aren't hearing what you're saying. Only unsaved people are hearing it when saved people should be able to hear this as well. And while the reaction was kind of an indictment about the conservative nature of a lot of Christians, I still kind of had to walk and think through that. So when you put this track together, I'm sure other people have heard it already, other than me, while you were in the production process and whatnot, enough that you've changed the name of it from Nigga Island to Jim Crow. What kind of feedback have you received on this already, and what kind of thought processes have kind of informed your decision to make a clean version and even to change the name of the track itself?
Yeah. One is very similar to like Niggas in Paris, the Jay-Z Kanye song.
Mm-hmm.
I wanted people to be able to say the title of the song when they have conversation about it and when they dialogue about it. So, you know, that was one obstacle. I felt like there's no need for me to leave the title that and let's remove it. And I didn't fit the concept of the album. Once I decided to go with like proper nouns for the, you know, the concept of the album titles itself, then that just didn't really fit that concept. So I changed it to Jim Crow. And I think the idea of Jim Crow in itself is powerful beyond words, because there's going to be thousands of people who buy my album who have no idea what Jim Crow is. And so they're going to hopefully Google it or Wikipedia it, and they're going to learn something about the Jim Crow laws and so on and so forth. And then so the other thing is, yeah, I sent it to many people, got lots of criticism. I rewrote a verse on, because some of the criticism and some of the feedback and wisdom I got. And then the changing the having the edited version is because there's a possibility that I want people to listen to it with their kids, maybe, or listen to it with people who just don't feel comfortable with the word. And so the content is still going to be strong in itself within the verses, enough for them to invoke some sort of dialogue and conversation that's popping. And so on the hard version, on the physical version, it's going to say Colored Island and not the N word. And in the digital, it's going to say Nigga Island. So.
Interesting. Okay. Now, I want to talk about the track Madoff. I mean, there's a lot of tracks that we could talk about, but again, we only have a brief amount of time, and you and I can catch up offline. Let's talk about Madoff, because I do think that is probably one of the most actually incendiary tracks on the album, and rightly so.
I actually appreciate like, because what you're communicating is exactly what I feel is going to happen to this album. Like, there's going to be tons of attention brought to Jim Crow when there
right.
are other songs that I really believe that people need to hear just as much as Jim Crow, maybe even more to some degree. And honestly, I think Madoff is one of those tracks. And so hats off to you, brother.
But, yeah, man. Economic disparity and the unfair treatment. That whole track to me was like, man. Everybody needs to hear this, and not just hear this, but to think about the message. I love the line, you know, rich man lies and he rises, poor man lies and he dies. I was like, that is so true, and we see that in the news all the time. And of course, the track is named after Bernie Madoff, who you know, was head of this huge Ponzi scheme, I want to say, in New York, New York Stock Exchange. I don't know all the details of that, but it was very interesting that he even went to jail, because that's not normally the case.
Right.
But he got away with it. He got away with it a lot longer than a poor person would have gotten away with it.
So,
talk a little bit about what developed that, and then we'll kind of, again, we don't have a lot of time, but we'll close it out. Why focus on economic disparity and name this track Madoff?
Yeah, so one of the things I did not want to do is waste a track. I didn't want to waste album space with this project. And so when I went to record a song, when I thought through concepting songs, I wanted to really deal with things. I didn't want to just make a song just because I thought it was going to be a hot song. I was like, man, what are people going to walk away with when they listen to this song? And one of the things that I deal with, I don't live in the greatest of neighborhoods, and that's intentional, because I just believe in being a beacon of change. And so, but I also don't live in the projects either. But when I look around my community, and when I look around the areas that some of the areas I grew up in, I grew up in wealthy neighborhoods, and I've also lived in poverty. And so when I look at kind of like the discrepancy, kind of like the gap in how we handle, like, even like drug laws, how we handle, you know, blue collar crimes, white collar crimes.
Absolutely.
in regards to poor people versus like rich people or people of wealth, there's just a huge disparity that it just grieves me, and it breaks my heart. And so this song is kind of like a castigation of just this whole idea of wealth and the extent to which people will do, and the things, the levels and the heights that people will go to obtain it, even to the
mm-hmm.
point where it's at the expense of other people. And so I try to touch on, you know, drug laws. I try to touch on the medical field. I try to touch on everything from just hood, what we call hood rich. So there's a whole bunch of just different concepts I try to touch on in this song. And Madoff was just, it just came to me. It was just like the other title that I was wrestling with was King Midas. So the idea of just being gold happy. So. But Madoff just made more sense.
Yeah, that track just blew me. I mean, I play it over and over and over and over and over again. I mean, again, I've listened to the entire album. I do think that it's a solid project beginning to end, a lot more thoughtful content than a huge amount of Christian hip-hop albums. And again, I mean, I love everything that's out there. Don't get me wrong, but I do think that we need more Christian thinkers who are also picking up the mic. You know, Propaganda is another guy who I think of, who is a Christian thinker and willing to say stuff that, that, you know, gets under people's skin. I just hope that the message is got. You know, did you ever see Bamboozled, the film Bamboozled?
Of course.
Okay. There is that film Bamboozled. And I was talking to somebody about Propaganda the other day, and Prop, if you're listening to this, anyway, I hope you are. Either way, in that movie, the two guys are, you know, kind of
Mantan and Sleepy.
Yeah, and so they're kind of dancing around and being paid to be these, I guess, buffoons, so to speak. And so I was talking about propaganda and the poem Precious Puritans that had come out, and he had done his thing, and he's, of course, now invited to all of these events where he can do this poem and kick white people in the teeth and, you know, white evangelicals in the teeth. And they're like, yeah, and they're willing to be uncomfortable for a few moments, but don't push too far.
Right.
Because then, you know, they'll put us, you know, put you back in your place. They'll prop you. We invited you here, say your thing, and then move on. And I don't know what his experience has been, but when it's something like this, when there is thoughtful content, I hold it over and against the things like, you know, the evangelical rap that's out there, all the stuff that has been around, the label that you were part of for a while, do love their content. But I wonder if more and more Christian hip hop artists or hip hop artists were doing what you were doing and saying what you were saying, would they be invited to the big events, or would they be shut up and put in the corner, or said, hey, you know, you can dance for us, but don't push too far. Don't bring attention to anything that.
I believe it's, you know, this is not an indictment on anybody out there, but I just don't believe so. I don't believe that there's much leeway to bring the kind of criticism and commentary that some people want to bring to our Christendom that we are partaking in right now. And the reality is people have a certain skill set, gifting, and an intellectual level bent or whatever, however you want to communicate it, and they communicate and they talk, preach, rap, write about the things that are passionate to them, and you can't knock them for that. And I don't want somebody to speak on racism if they don't have the intellectual assent to do that. I don't want to force people to write about economic pitfalls if they don't have the bent to do that. Like, so for me, you know, I feel called to do that, but I also have no desire to be the boy in certain circles. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
And so it, for me, there's no question of whether or not, you know, I can care less about if I'll ever be invited to this or that, because that's not my passion. That's not my goal. Now, if there were other type of invites, that's something different. Like, you know, cause those are the kind of circles I want to be in and deal with in some of those kind of more social, African-American circles where you have like your Cornel West and your Jeff Johnsons and, and where I can kind of give, the black evangelical perspective that I feel is kind of missing, because we're all typecast as a certain type of people, intolerant, ignorant, kind of like, you know, puppets. And so those are the circles that I would love to be in where I feel like Jesus can be made famous, and which I don't think he is being made. He's just, right now, he's just kind of like an instrument to kind of be rubbed up against like a genie. So whenever you need something done, he's like, hey, Jesus, we need you this time to kind of help us. So.
Yeah. Well, so again, we always run long when we talk. So yeah. It's just like getting online with a friend, everybody. So I apologize for going long, but hey, always love catching up. Up with you. Last question. Where can people find out more about what you're doing? And I guess, what is the official release date for Talented 10?
January 15th is the official release date, but obviously some people have decided to start selling the physical copies before that date. So,
interesting. Didn't know that.
Yes, but the official release date is January 15th. It was January 1st, but we pushed it back to January 15th for many reasons. One, I just felt like it'd just be a more exciting release date for me to be on MLK's birthday, also. So.
Right.
So now people really think I'm going to be pulled back after this conversation. I'm like, oh, this
brother. Oh, yeah, they're really. So where can people find out more about you in the meantime?
So website is lionsandliars.com, lionsandliars.com. I'm on Twitter. It's AMISHOBARAKA. And its Facebook is the same, AMISHOBARAKA.
All right.
And so, yeah, if you're around Atlanta and you see me, holler at me, talk to me.
All right, cool. Well, show again, always a pleasure catching up with you, and thanks so much for hopping on the line with us.
Man, thank you for having me.
No problem. You have a good one.
I know people talk, delete that junk mail. I got my passport stamped overseas, digging wells. Trying not to lust for them clothes. I can't spell if you don't live behind your bars. You and I don't jail. Free man now, but a slave to my savior. College graduate, but I'm still going for majors. Yeah, black belt in a bad way. You don't know, I did what my sins said. Breach. Notorious was my mindset. I got faith, wasn't ready to die yet.